Nigerian confraternities operating in South Africa have become mired in transnational organized crime. We get the details from Dr. Christian Ani of the INACT program at the Institute for Security Studies in Abuja. Welcome, Doctor.
Thank you very much for having me.
Firstly, what is the origin of these movements?
Thank you very much. So the Black Ass Network is part of the, you know, the several Nigerian confraternities that have come up since the 1950s when we had the Pirates Confraternity as the first confraternity led by Africa's first Nobel Peace Prize winner, Wole Soyinka. And then afterwards, in the 1970s, we now have a number of other confraternities coming up. And Black Ass is one of them, also called the New Black Ass, New Black Movement of Africa, was one of them. And when that emerged, it was coming at the heels of trying to propagate, you know, social justice. It was at a time when apartheid was going on. If you remember, it was just when the students were killed at the massacre of 1976. So for them, they were like feeling all boisterous and students less actively support where we can. But also they had other local issues that they were also dealing with. You know, there is issues of elitism within the university setup at the time. The older confraternities were kind of, you know, very exclusionary. So this Black Ass coming within that those setup wanted to also create its own stance and to also say that, you know, it's liberal. Every other person can join if they do want to join in. So that's how the movement started up as a social movement within the university setup, you know, as a youth activist kind of setup. But yeah, things happened along the way that kind of derailed the movement's trajectory.
Mm. What happened for that to happen?
So two things. One was that, you know, as I said, there were a number of confraternities that emerged. So they were all vying for rivalry among themselves. You know, they kind of sought to establish their dominance and relevance and to ensure that, you know, they are the most preferred confraternity in any case. So they began to recruit people in a more liberal manner. And people were now saying that, you know, some of the people that I've interviewed, they say that it's that liberal recruitment that created room for, you know, some rogue elements to get in. In the past, people were recruited to confraternities based on academic excellence and high academic performance. It continued to be the case, but then it became more liberalized. That is one. And then the second aspect is that, you know, within this ecosystem of confraternities, what then happened was that, you know, a culture of violence crept in. You know, they used violence to kind of, you know, propagate their ideas and to show that they are the, you know, they are the force to reckon with within the university campuses. And you also need to remember that it's within a time when Nigeria was facing the military coups. You know, we had a lot of military dictatorships. For some analysts, it's kind of normalized violence in many ways and kind of shows that violence, you know, is the most preferred way of engagement in society. So that is where the challenge began to emerge.
And Hermanus is a man from this windy little town called Yaku. Sorry, other way around. Yaku's from Hermanus. Yaku, we need to talk about your upgrade problem.
I don't have an upgrade problem.
Two Audis, an Opel, a Kia, and a Hyundai. It's five cars, Yaku.
Denial.
I just love cars. And we rebuy cars that make it so much easier for you and convenient to sell your car.
You want to try it?
Okay, just once.
Turn off the cameras.
I see how this is addictive.
Take two of those. We buy cars. The easiest way to sell your car by far.
What crimes are they now linked to here in South Africa?
So in South Africa, they've been linked to a number of crimes, including things like especially cybercrime. Cybercrime is one of the, you know, prominent crimes that the group is linked to. For instance, in 2021, this came to fore when about eight Black Ass members were arrested in Cape Town. And then also there has been several arrests, over 20 arrests, both in Cape Town and Johannesburg and across South Africa, you know, linking them to the Black Ass. The Cape Town case, you know, involved, you know, a huge network of the Black Ass that was operating not only in South Africa, but also the network in Europe and also in the US. They all teamed up to orchestrate these activities. Most of the activities were romance scams, while others were business email compromise scams that they were involved in. But then a number of members also are also involved in issues like drug trafficking, and then others have also been reported to be involved in human trafficking where necessary. There are some cases of people who claim, you know, the money doublers and then fake sangomas, you know, where necessary. But there's a nuance to it, though, that, you know, that the Black Ass is not actually organizing it, or, you know, sitting as an organization and leading these crimes. You know, the organization does not wake up and say, okay, let's go and scam so and so. That's not, the organization doesn't do that. Within their hierarchical structure, the organization does not do that, you know. Within the constitution, when you look at the constitution, it's a very legitimate constitution, you know, that looks at the welfare of the people who are members, and also looks at the, you know, welfare of other people, humanitarians, you know, looking at how to support people across board, you know. But then what happens then is that due to the culture of violence that was now, you know, that have perverted the confraternities, they use that as a protection racket to support whoever it is. So now criminal entities who are more vocal and are much more powerful have been able to leverage that, you know, culture of violence that have become very pervasive within the group to, you know, kind of seek their protection. So whenever they have a challenge within the criminal underworld, they come and then bring it over to their confraternities and say, okay, I have these so-so challenges. I have these issues with some members and so-so members. How do you, I need help, you know? And they go to provide that help. And it can be several ways. One, it can be, you know, use of violence to either intimidate the opponent. It can be the use of violence to also, you know, take out an opponent in some cases, you know. And they have a large network, you know, across the globe. So the arms of the network will get to you at some point. So there have been cases of people who committed or went into rivalries with the Black Ass group, maybe in Nigeria, and then they come to South Africa. You know, the group here in South Africa will get to engage those people. You know, and it's also most of their rivalries is within those confraternities themselves. For instance, we have the Eye confraternity. We have the Vikings confraternity. We have Mafite confraternity, several confraternities operating here and across the globe as well. So if they do a deal, for instance, they collaboratively, you know, do a romance scam, and you know that, you know, these scams involve a huge network. You know, you need large network of people to orchestrate some of the money transfers that, you know, are going on. So one of the persons that is involved in the crime or is involved in the activity decide to renege on sending the share that is supposed to send to a member of the confraternity, then that is a security guarantee that that person has to now call up his members and say, okay, this and this happened to me, and it's happened to me by a fellow member or by another confraternity group member or from anywhere it is. And then that's how then they do the engagement, and then they try to sort it out for the individuals. And secondly, they can also, you know, provide legal support to their members. For instance, some of the members in Italy, for instance, were in legal, you know, quagmire and problems. They donated funds to support the member, which is good. It's part of, you know, what associations do sometimes. But in some cases, there's that awareness that, you know, that a member is involved in this and this and that, but they still stand up for their member to protect their member where necessary.
Do we know how many confraternities are operating in South Africa at present?
There's no fixed number to it, but I would say at least you have about five strong confraternities operating, five dominant ones. For instance, if you're talking of, you know, the Black Ass itself that is operating, you know, you have the Vikings that is operating as well. You have the AYA confraternity that is operating as well. You have groups like the Buccaneers as well that are operating, and also a Mafite that are operating within the country. But, you know, and that rivalry that persists within them in Johannesburg, especially this year, there's been several cases of rivalry between some of the group. It can just emerge, erupt because of business deal gone wrong between Black Ass and the Vikings. And it starts from the individual level, as I explained earlier on. It starts from the individual or a small network group of individuals, then quickly escalates into an entire confraternity crisis. So that's how it has been playing out here in South Africa.
Now, you have probably been following the Matlanga Commission inquiry and the ad hoc committee hearing in Parliament, in which we have been hearing testimony about corrupt cops, cartel bosses, and captured politicians. Are they linked in any way to this police capture?
Yeah, so for now, directly in terms of the name, there was a name that also circulated at some point. For now, some of those from fact checking, some of them did not actually appear in terms of being a part of confraternities and things like that. But you need to know that the group is highly connected. They have highly connected members who, you know, have who have been able to compromise key security teams. So, for instance, for an example, there was a time there was issues between the Durban zone. You know, there's several zones. You know, when you have the confraternities, you also have several zones operating. So, in Durban, for instance, there's a zone. In Johannesburg, there's also a zone. And then Ekurhuleni, there's also a zone. So sometimes they get police officers to do their bidding, for instance. If they have issue with one of a confraternity member, they kind of report on that person and say, okay, this person, so-and-so person is harboring drugs, or so-and-so person is doing this and that. And they get the police officer to go and then search the other person, and then vice versa. The other person can also go and get his cronies who are part of security officials to do the same to the other person. So in many ways, you see that, you know, they have a way of having sway on security officials where necessary. And then also you see that there were some cases, for instance, the Tinder swindler who defrauded about 500,000 USD from a South African lady. Sometime in 2022, he was arrested in 2022. In that case, he offered BMW cars, you know, and offered several cars to the people, to the police officers that arrested the individual, you know. But then it just shows that because the case was already out there, and also the officials that went there were not corruptible, that kind of, you know. But I'm just giving these examples to show that, you know, some of the individuals that are involved are highly connected, and they also have good resources that could sway the moral compass of law enforcement agents.
Do you know whether they also have high-level political connections?
Not really. I don't have specific connections to that beyond the rumors that have been linked to it. But if it's in terms of that, there is high likelihood, but nothing confirmed for now.
Have you seen a report on the confidential report drawn up by our crime intelligence organization on the Nigerian drug lords in South Africa? They named many of them as the Pablo Escobars of South Africa. Are they linked to the confraternities?
Yeah. So it takes a while to sometimes, because they're a little bit secretive, their individual names. So it takes a while to actually know who belongs to where. So it might not be the Black Eyes, it might be AA. If they don't belong to AA, then Buccaneers or Vikings, in that way. And then it takes a while, a little bit of profiling to do that. But, you know, there have been several people that have been arrested. And because South Africa doesn't know much about confraternities and all that, you know, whoever is being arrested, they just say, okay, oh, Nigerian national is arrested. Which is okay, but then, you know, sometimes actors, for instance, in the US, now in Europe, are beginning to know that it's not just a blanket assumption that, oh, it's Nigerian, no, but then to dig deeper and check which confraternity does this person belong to, you know, which group does this person belong to. And, you know, it comes from asking questions and then doing the investigation, drawn out investigations beyond just saying, oh, an individual has been arrested and then that is the case. But then there are two dynamics. There are different dynamics to it. First, things like cybercrime, sometimes it's easy to find it out because you go through computers, you follow trail of communications, and then see, oh, this person has several networks that they're engaging with in Europe and things. You can find some information that might lead you to the Black Eyes. And they do that digital forensics. But things like human trafficking, drug trafficking, for instance, they don't have those. They don't really go into, they're just looking at, oh, which human being are you holding captive, you know, or which drug are you trading, you know, without really saying, okay, yes, we know you're into this, but then what are some of the networks that you have, you know, to better dig deep, to get into understand that. So in actual fact, most of the cases that we have in South Africa, you know, that are linked to Black Eyes or other different confraternity, the cases originated from the US. You know, very few cases or one or two cases originated from South Africa that they actually identified that this person belonged to this and that confraternity. So then that makes it very difficult to kind of, you know how you tailor and engage. Even the confraternity, for me, I always say that you have to engage the confraternities themselves because they claim they are open and humanitarian organization and that is open to for social justice and support to people. So they should be also open to, you know, supporting investigations on their members who are part of you know, criminal networks.
They sound globally extremely powerful, Dr. Ani.
Yeah, they are.
It's not possible to dismantle these confraternities by the sound of it, is it?
Yeah, as in they are everywhere. We're talking about across the continents, you know, across all the continents, maybe not Antarctica, but then across, we have a full list of them, of the groups, you know, that and where they belong, which zones belong to where. And they're highly expansive. You know, and they're a very, very dominant group. And sometimes, for instance, in South Africa or Johannesburg zone, for instance, you see up to or more than 200 members participating in one zonal meeting. You know, so it just shows that they are, you know, they're forced to reckon with. But then also, in terms of dismantling, in terms of how, based on the research that we have done, that is not just a mere thing of saying, oh, let's go and dismantle the group or let's just go and find all the group members. And then, but, you know, if they're able to use the idea or the knowledge, if law enforcement agents use the knowledge of the confraternities then you can dismantle the syndicates, the criminal syndicates operating within the group and who are now, you know, feeding into that protection racket that I spoke to you about in that way. So those criminal syndicates are relying heavily on the protection racket that is being provided by these confraternities. And in some cases, some members are not involved in crime. We have lawyers, we have doctors, we have politicians. Even if it's in Nigeria, you have law enforcement agents who are part of this group. So when you speak about dismantling, sometimes it's not a blanket thing about, let's get this and this. But then by being member to a large extent is because of the oath of secrecy and all that the group has, a lot of members could be drawn into, you know, crime if necessary, whether knowingly or by omission, you know, by not reporting cases of crime or things like that by their members. So I'll leave it at that it's not just about let's go and dismantle the group, but, you know, let's do the first engagement of, let's engage the group because they are there in the open. You can find them if you need them. If you want to find them, you get them. You know, engage them and say, okay, if you want a clean slate, let's begin to work with us, you know, to fish out the criminal elements that is there. And they have been doing a lot more reactive actions in terms of suspending some members that have been openly declared, you know, as members, so that they kind of say, okay, no, we are also saying no to it. But they don't do it before the fact. They do it only after the fact. But if there's no association to their or to any black as or anything to the member, they don't suspend. They just leave it as that and then let the case lie. So, but then if you begin to engage these members and get them to understand that if they want to rebrand themselves, then this is what they could do to support law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is the criminal elements that have hijacked or who are abusing confraternities have to be extracted with the cooperation of the confraternities themselves, and that is the solution.
Yeah, and it's very difficult. I'm not saying, because you know how criminal syndicates work. They work up their way up to the highest level of leadership. So, for instance, when you go to the Cape Town, for instance, the 8 members that were arrested in Cape Town, they were high level officials, you know, but they were operating within their own syndicate structure. Not necessarily, you know, getting everyone involved in the crimes that they were doing, but operating within their high syndicate structure, so that whenever anything happens, they're able to easily mobilize and say, oh, no, we have a problem as a confraternity. This group or that individual is threatening a member. Let's rise up and stay. And you know how networks work. The higher you are in a state of position, the higher you, the ability you have for you to mobilize people where necessary. So I'm not saying it's easy in any way to say, okay, no, let's just go after the criminal syndicate without leaving then you leave the bigger structure. No, you engage all the structures and you get to find out, fish out the bad elements, and over time, you know, the ones who are willing to, you know, be more cooperative and engage in humanitarian activities and who are also within lines of good profession, they can continue to exist and operate legitimately, either within confraternities if they choose to or outside that confraternity.
Dr. Ani, you arrived from Abuja in South Africa this morning. What are you here for?
Yes, so tomorrow we have a workshop trying to look at, you know, these Nigerian confraternities in South Africa, and then to look at, you know, the dilemma or the puzzle that we're in around whether they're a criminal enterprise, which some people tend to ascribe to them, or they're a brotherhood, you know, to get a better sense of, you know, how do we begin to understand these confraternities and how do we engage them, you know, without sending them underground, but also, dealing decisively with the criminal aspects.
While you're here, will you have a chance to engage with the confraternities personally?
Yes, sometimes I do, but through some specific individuals who are willing to engage. But then also it's always a cautious activity. Some of the members tend to feel like, you know, when you speak about them, it's a crime, or it's not a good thing to speak about them, that you're bringing negative press to them. But obviously they also understand very clearly that, you know, their members have put, or syndicates operating within those confraternities have put, a bad light to, you know, how they operate and what they do. So how do we begin to engage them on a regular basis?
It's a very complex issue, isn't it?
It is a highly complex issue. Yeah. So okay. Tomorrow I hope to unpack it much more, as in the meeting starts at 11. And also it's online on the ENACT and the Institute for Security Studies website. So I'm hoping to unpack it clearly for our audience tomorrow.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to that. That was Dr. Christian Arney of the ENACT program at the Institute for Security Studies in Abuja, speaking to BizNews about the operations of co-fraternities in South Africa. And I'm Christine. Thank you, Doctor.